On a seasonably warm May afternoon, a slight breeze shakes the trees that line the parking lot shared by City Hall and the Hilton in downtown Waco. Birds are chirping, and the wind has caused water from a nearby fountain to spill onto the cobblestone street. A pastoral scene that 100 years ago was the site where an estimated 15,000 people gathered to witness, and some participate, as Jesse Washington, an illiterate farmhand, was lynched. The event was so gruesome, it became nationally known as the Waco Horror. Soon, the community found itself at a crossroads, to denounce the act or to allow this culture to continue. Lynching, however, wasn't an outlier, not for the time and not for the area, as lynch law and mob violence had become an all too common occurrence, especially in central Texas.
What happens, you know, after 1880 is that there is still a culture that says a real man takes the law into their own hands and is willing to defend their community whenever crisis emerges. And so that value is still there. Fathers still tell their sons that, and it's still kind of clear from all these other aspects of culture that that's what a real man is.
That's William Kerrigan, author of The Making of a Lynching Culture. He says in the decades before the 20th century, lynch mobs justified their actions by claiming that the frontier conditions made the legal system ineffective. So in order to protect the community and their families, they took matters into their own hands. Those beliefs, charged with racist ideologies, are in part what fueled the lynching culture that ran rampant in central Texas, says James Sorrell, a professor of history at Baylor University. Sorrell wrote the 1983 article, The Waco Horror, The Lynching of Jesse Washington.
Lynching, kind of almost by definition, has been depicted, or was depicted, certainly in the 19th century, as a response, a justifiable response to some terrible aggression committed typically against women.
Like many southern towns coming off the hills of the Reconstruction era, Waco retained high levels of racial tension, allowing for mob violence and lynchings to grow in numbers. But from 1897 to 1905, lynch mob activity in central Texas halted. Kerrigan attributes this to Waco's first 54th District County Judge, Samuel Scott, who took action against the lynch mobs. But that reprieve ended in 1905, just 11 years before the lynching of Jesse Washington, when Sank Majors, a black man who was in jail awaiting retrial for an alleged rape, was taken by a white mob and hanged from the Washington Street Bridge in Waco. Kerrigan says during this time, there are examples of people like Judge Scott whose work went against the lynching culture, but there are also those who helped to reinforce it.
The culture is never so powerful that it controls individuals. And in fact, individuals can make decisions that go against this lynching culture. And individuals do. A lot of individuals don't, but some do. And they can be pretty powerful if they're the right individual at the right time.
Despite the 8-year stay in lynch mob activity in central Texas, lynching was still an all too common practice in the area. Anderson and McLennan counties, according to the advocacy group Equal Justice Initiative, had the most recorded lynchings in Texas between 1877 and 1950. During this time, the group estimates that nearly 380 lynchings occurred, the heaviest concentration of which, according to the Texas State Historical Association, happened along the Brazos River, from Waco down to the Gulf of Mexico. Sorrell says the distinction in this area from other parts of the country was the South's long history of whites and blacks living together.
And on one hand, you say, well, that could breed a familiarity. I think that's what whites argued. We know our colored people. But it also bred a tension, a conflict, particularly when you mix in arguments about sexual aggression.
In the decades leading up to the Waco Horror, the city was trying to promote a completely different image for itself, most notably as the so-called Athens of Texas, a moniker that acknowledged Waco's many schools. It was also soon dubbed the Wonder City and the City with a Soul, that specific nickname, a reflection of the city's strong religious undercurrent. But apart from the nicknames, Waco was a thriving community. With a population of 33,000, it was one of the 8 largest urban areas in Texas. The Waco community saw their town as the perfect medium between a metropolitan city and a true southern town, and its economy reflected that. But the city's seemingly progressive and religiously moral atmosphere did not extend to all corners of its culture. There was one other epithet for Waco, Six Shooter Junction, a reference to the pockets of violent frontier life that remained.
How the court system and the legal authorities respond to lynching is absolutely key.
Extra-legal violence continued well into the 20th century. Lynching occurred when Jim Crow laws still existed, laws put into effect by southern states to limit African-American rights. With racial intolerance at the helm and a town that had turned towards mob violence for justice, the scene was undeniably set for what would happen in 1916. For KWBU, I'm Carlos Morales.